Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The 10 Things You Can't Say in America is a conservative political nonfiction book by Larry Elder, first published in 2000 and later issued in revised form. It argues that American public debate is constrained by political correctness and that several widely discussed social assumptions are either distorted or wrongly treated as off limits. The book is built around 10 controversial claims about race, media, welfare, government, crime, healthcare, drugs, and political identity, which Elder presents as subjects that deserve open examination rather than taboo status. Its style is direct, argumentative, and heavily oriented toward policy critique, reflecting Elder's background as a radio host and columnist. Rather than offering a neutral survey of American politics, the book seeks to challenge prevailing liberal narratives and make a case for limited government, personal responsibility, and skepticism toward institutional orthodoxies. As a result, it functions both as a polemical essay collection and as a debate-driven statement of conservative libertarian views. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, political correctness as the book's central target. The organizing idea of the book is that some questions in American life are treated as untouchable not because they are false, but because they conflict with dominant progressive assumptions. Elder frames political correctness as a system that discourages debate by defining certain claims as unacceptable before they can be tested. That matters because the book is not simply listing provocative opinions for effect. It is arguing that censorship by social pressure weakens public reasoning. In this sense, the title refers less to literal prohibition than to cultural enforcement. Elder wants readers to see taboo language as a symptom of intellectual stagnation, where disagreement is replaced by moral labeling. This framing gives the book its polemical structure and explains why it repeatedly returns to media, academia, and political elites as institutions that reinforce conformity. The point is not just to criticize specific policies, but to challenge the broader habit of treating ideology as settled fact. Secondly, race, resentment, and the critique of victimhood. Several of the 10 claims focus on race relations, especially Elder's argument that racial grievance is often discussed in one direction only. He challenges the idea that racism is a simple matter of white prejudice against Black Americans and argues that Black racism, white condescension, and mutual distrust all deserve more honest discussion. This approach is central to the book because it reframes race from a one-sided moral narrative into a more complicated social dynamic. Elder also criticizes what he calls a victim mentality, suggesting that public discourse can reward grievance while discouraging accountability. Whether readers agree or not, the logic of the chapter structure is clear. He is trying to move the conversation away from symbolic guilt and toward individual behavior, family structure, and incentives. This is one of the book's most controversial dimensions because it confronts established racial language directly and rejects the assumption that all disparities should be interpreted through systemic racism alone. Thirdly, family breakdown and illegitimacy as a social policy crisis. One of the book's most distinctive arguments is that illegitimacy and family instability are more damaging to America than many problems that receive far more public attention. Elder treats breakdown in family formation, especially children born outside stable marriage or committed partnerships, as a root cause of poverty, educational difficulty, crime, and welfare dependence. This is a policy argument as much as a moral one, because it links private behavior to public costs and long-term social outcomes. The emphasis on illegitimacy gives the book a structural focus instead of treating symptoms like crime or underachievement separately. Elder presents them as downstream effects of a weakened family environment. That reasoning helps explain why he repeatedly criticizes government programs that manage consequences without addressing causes. Even readers who reject his conclusions can see that this chapter is intended to shift the debate from surface-level interventions toward cultural and behavioral foundations. It is one of the book's clearest examples of using social conservatism to interpret public policy. Fourthly, government dependence, welfare policy, and the limits of redistribution. The book presents a sustained case against the welfare state, arguing that many government programs reduce incentives for self-support and expand dependency rather than opportunity. Elder extends this critique beyond on a party, blaming both Democrats and Republicans for sustaining a large state that often protects incumbents and entrenched interests instead of ordinary citizens. His argument is not limited to welfare in the narrow sense. It includes entitlements, taxation, labor rules, and bureaucratic growth. This makes the book's economic dimension more radical than a simple anti-aid message. Elder proposes a sweeping smaller government agenda, including the abolition of the IRS and major reductions in federal power, which reflects a libertarian belief that institutions should interfere less in markets and personal life. The chapter set therefore links economics with moral responsibility in Elder's view. Policy should reward work, family stability, and individual initiative rather than subsidized dependence. This gives the book a coherent ideological center even when it moves across different issue areas. Lastly, media bias, drugs, healthcare, and the book's wide-ranging anti-establishment agenda. Beyond race and welfare, the book extends its critique to media coverage, the war on drugs, healthcare claims, and the idea that Democrats and Republicans are fundamentally different on core governing assumptions. Elder argues that the media often amplifies narratives of systemic injustice while ignoring counterexamples, which reinforces the book's broader complaint about one-sided public discourse. His treatment of the drug war is similarly skeptical, portraying it as an unwinnable and destructive policy failure rather than a moral victory. On healthcare, he questions alarmist political rhetoric and suggests that state-centered solutions are often sold through oversimplified crisis language. Even his point about the two major parties fits the same pattern. He minimizes partisan distinctions in favor of a deeper critique of the governing consensus. Together, these chapters show that the book is not only about social controversy, but about institutional distrust. Its range makes it more than a single-issue polemic. It is an attempt to connect cultural speech rules with policy failure across multiple domains. In conclusion, The 10 Things You Can't Say in America will appeal most to readers interested in conservative, libertarian, and politically contentious nonfiction, especially those who want a forceful challenge to mainstream progressive assumptions. It is also useful for readers studying American political rhetoric, media criticism, or the late 1990s and early 2000s culture wars, because it captures a particular moment in partisan debate with unusual clarity. Its practical value lies less in offering a neutral overview than in presenting a fully developed counterargument to familiar policy and cultural narratives. For sympathetic readers, it sharpens arguments about personal responsibility, welfare dependence, media framing, and government overreach. For skeptical readers, it offers a clear example of how a polemical book constructs its case through issue selection, framing, and repeated appeals to taboo breaking. What distinguishes it from many books in the same genre is its combination of activism, radio host directness, and policy breadth. It is not only a complaint about political correctness. It is a tightly organized attempt to turn controversy into a larger argument about American institutions, incentives, and civic honesty. If you would like to support Larry Elder, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.